when you get rid of a DeMarcus Cousins or a player of that caliber, you better be sure that you are all in as an organization, because you don't find a player of that caliber just anywhere in the draft in year one or year two. It's going to take time for that player to develop and put up those type of numbers.
Right.
We're talking about with a high caliber all-star player.
Rick Bucher.
I wonder if there's more conversation and more people involved in doing a deal now than maybe back in the day, where it was a little more straight line. And that's what makes it so complicated, because you're trading in a way, you're trading smarter, but you can overanalyze the situation too.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 32nd episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. BJ, really looking forward to doing this show in particular, a lot to get into. And we will be having Tim Hardaway Jr. That makes both of us feel old, I know. Because,
man, so old right now.
Yeah.
So old.
You played with Senior. I covered Senior. I covered the two of you. And there's a question that I cannot wait to ask Junior about how much he knew about what went on when you and his dad played together. Because there were some hard feelings that ultimately resulted in Tim Senior deciding he wanted to get up and out and off to Miami. But we will save that for the fourth quarter. I want to get right to it.
Get into it.
All right. So first quarter. Go around the league, and the number one issue, we were just past the All-Star game, just past the trade deadline, but now there is talk about improving the All-Star game because it was such an abomination, really unwatchable. I think a lot of people tuned in to see how the whole KD Russ Westbrook interaction would go, and after they connected on a give and go and a lob, everybody sort of lost interest because the game itself didn't have a whole lot to offer. Now, BJ, there apparently has been some discussion between Chris Paul and Adam Silver about trying to fix the All-Star game. And one of the things is to introduce a four-pointer. They're also asking NBA fans to email
gimmicks.
Suggestions.
More well, gimmick.
And again, that's my thing, is I look at that and I think, okay, so the problem is that guys are just jacking threes and we're not playing defense and the scoring is out of hand. So now we're going to incite guys to shoot from even deeper. I'm assuming the 4-point play is going to be because you're shooting a three from like half court. I don't see that as the solution. Do you? And if not, do you have any other ideas?
Well, once again, we're always, say we, the league is always finding ways to make it more entertaining,
right,
without sticking to what the game is all about, the competitive spirit of the game.
Right.
So what I would like to see is some type of competitive that's meaningful to the game itself. You know, whether it is if the West wins, they get the home court advantage, or the East wins, whatever it may be. But let's come up with a reason to keep the game competitive. That's why we play the game, is to compete. Now we're getting to a point when we watch the All-Star and the All-Star events, it's just pure entertainment now with no competitive.
So what's your answer?
I think what you do is, you know, first, I think it's going to start with the players. And if you look at what the All-Star game was all about, it was about gaining your competitive advantage over your opponent. Now, everyone's just out there dunking, throwing alley-oops, you know, guys are doing what they do. But, you know, there was a time, believe it or not, where you came to the All-Star game because you wanted to see how good this guy really was. And you wanted to make sure that he actually knew that, you know what, Rick Bucher is pretty good. And I'm going to be pretty good in an All-Star event. I'm going to be pretty good in practice. Whenever I see you, I wanted to make sure that I have a competitive advantage over you. That was the mindset then. It's just a different mindset now. So I think it starts with the players. I firmly believe that, you know, it will come back to that. But right now, we're just in kind of a downswing where guys just say, hey, I'm here at All-Star Weekend. I'm just going to get through this, play, and then move on to the regular season. So, but I think it's going to come back.
Now, see, I'm a man about solutions. I'm not a man about complaining. I'm not a man about saying, oh, this sucks. I like to come up with solutions. I like to talk about how do we make it better. But in this case, I'll be honest, I've never thought the All-Star game was that great because it's sort of advertised as the best of the best. But that said, you know, what is at stake and where are our expectations? And I just feel as if you really want to get it back, then the emphasis has to be on the game and not all the surrounding things that the All-Star Weekend has become. And that's not going to happen. You're not going to get that horse back in the barn. People, it's not going to be, hey, to fix it, we're going to give up all the corporate parties and presentations and meetings and focus on all these other things. That's just not going to happen. So my feeling is at this point, either we have to lower our expectations or you make it something else. You make it a 3-on-3 tournament. I think the NHL has gone to that. You right. make it something else and you don't try to make it like the game itself. I think there are ways to the 3-point shooting, the dunk contest, the skills challenge. I'd like to see an expansion of skills challenges. I'd like to see bigs versus bigs doing various things. Guards versus guards. We'll never see a 1-on-1 tournament, but I'd love to see that.
Now, that's what I would pay to see. Now, a 1-on-1 tournament would be fab. I think that would be would be very interesting.
Now, you've been an agent, like you've been an executive. Is there any way in which you could get the players and the league to sign off on a 1-on-1 tournament?
Well, I tell you what, just off the top, now that we're going there.
Yeah.
If you put up enough money, I think guys would do it.
What's enough money? I'm always curious about this. Like what's you, cause you've got clients, you've played, you know, Shane, the producer and I, like there's times where like we're talking different, like the numbers are different. When you've been a professional athlete, I probably have a high figure just because my time is valuable to me. I have a relatively high figure, but it comes nowhere close to like what the number has to be for you or for a professional athlete. So I'm just wondering, like, what's the number have to be?
I got homeboys that'll do this right here for about 50 bucks.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, exactly. $500. Like,
everything is relative, okay? But hear me out. Everything is relative. If you put, let's say, for the top players in this league, right? The top players are in this league are making a substantial amount of money. Mm-hmm. I think if you put a winner take all, $1 million for All-Star Weekend in a 1-on-1 tournament.
Yeah.
That would be competitive.
Now I want to know the reason. Yeah. I want to know the reason why you
right exactly
because I know as an advertiser, marketing and all those things, I'm going to get some viewers, and I know it's that we can work out the business arrangement.
That's you know what
but now, but
and
now,
that's really the answer.
Yeah,
that's
and now,
the answer.
Now, if we put that up on the table, that right there is going to get some.
Oh,
that right
are you kidding
there,
me?
I want to see the best players. Now, when guys say they don't want to participate in the dunk contest or they're not going to participate because they need rest.
Right.
Now Rick Bucher and BJ Armstrong can come on the show and say, we don't know if this guy really wants to compete because there's enough money on the table that says everybody should be participating in this.
Yeah.
To me, All-Star Weekend is about one thing. The one thing I always love about All-Star games is when guys start playing one-on-one basketball. Yeah. I love to see when the best players, Kobe went at LeBron and then LeBron go back at Kobe and Shaquille O'Neal, remember when he was going at David Robinson and David Robinson, that's what I love.
I actually suggested, and you could still do it from a team concept, but imagine like you have East versus West and you're still picking the teams, you're still doing everything, but now LeBron and Kawhi go out there and they go one-on-one. And then Steph and Kyrie go one-on-one.
Where do
and
I you, sign up for
And that? You have like group. Yeah, you have team numbers. I mean, you're contributing to your team total. but it's, you know, Anthony Davis versus Antetokounmpo. You just find those matchups, and then it's a team result. Wouldn't you love watching that?
I would love to see that. That would be amazing. I would love to see that.
Let's say this. NBA, we know you're listening.
Right. Yeah. Get after it.
Let's get rid of the 5-on-5 NBA and let's make it a 1-on-1 game. Let's see Dwight Howard versus DeMarcus Cousins.
Yes.
Let's see Paul George versus LeBron James.
Yes.
Let's see Chris Paul versus Russell Westbrook. Right. Or Steph Curry, it's got to be
East versus West. I mean, it doesn't have to be. Like, you could have made an exception. You're gonna go, okay, just for like halftime entertainment, we're gonna have KD and Russ go one on one. Just even though they're on the same team, we just got something to settle here. All right, let's move on to the second quarter. There was the 79th triple double of the season by Ricky Rubio, and that is a record for number of triple doubles in a single season. I meant to look it up, but I know that the triple doubles have been going up exponentially the last 3 or 4 years. And as of right now, the leader is Russell Westbrook with 30, James Harden with 15. And you and I have talked about this at various times. I think we did it on my radio show last week. That I really believe that the triple double has been devalued. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from what Westbrook or Harden or anybody else is doing and how hard guys are playing, but I don't think this is a function of just, you know, unique players as much as it is the game has changed. And I think the collective number of triple doubles, already the record being broken with what, 5-6 weeks left in the season, speaks to that. So I wonder, when you hear that this record was set, and I know you're not a big numbers guy, but what was the first thing that came to mind, BJ?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind with all these records is, what does it mean?
Yeah.
Okay, I get these numbers. I'm looking at these numbers. I'm looking at these statistics. What does it mean? Mm-hmm. When I watch the great players in this game, they all affected winning. Now we're just talking about stats. Now, out of those games, who's actually winning? I don't think Oscar Robertson really cared about a triple-double.
Right.
So all of these stats and marveling over what guys are doing individually gets us farther and farther away from the truth. And the truth is, players are part of a collective team. So if these players are winning games, does it really matter? Does it really matter? What, like Michael Jordan? Okay, Michael Jordan averaged 30 something points a game. What we're celebrating here is that he was a winner. Tim Duncan was a winner. Kobe Bryant was a winner. Magic Johnson and all of the great players, Larry Bird, all of the great players that have ever played, we're celebrating their contributions to winning, not their individual. We marvel at it, we respect it, but in the end, okay, you're putting up fabulous numbers, but you're not winning. What does it mean? What does that mean?
And on top of all that, when I look at who's getting the triple doubles, so there are a total of 21 players this season who have recorded a triple double. The number of pure centers, first of all, there's only one pure center, unless you're going to count Karl Anthony Towns as a pure center. Marcus Gasol is the only pure center who has recorded a triple-double out of those 79, and he's had one. Nikola Jokic leads all of the power position players with 4. DeMarcus Cousins has 2. I counted 56 of the 79 triple-doubles are from guards, which to me tells you a lot about why and how these triple doubles are being created. And you know, I haven't talked about it, but I've never really gotten an answer from you, because I've mentioned the quad nickel. I've mentioned 5 in 4 categories, which means you have to have either 5 blocked shots or 5 steals. And both of us look at statistics and say, you can make them say anything you want. But I do feel as if we are going to go by numbers, if we're going to give as much value as we did to the triple double, I know that you can you can play for steals and you can really be playing bad defense because you're constantly trying to pick off the ball. And we don't count the number of times the guy goes for a steal and doesn't get it and leaves his team exposed 5-on-4. But that said, do you give that credence that if you have 5 steals or 5 block shots, you must be doing something right at least most of the time at the defensive end?
I do not. And the reason is because I've seen players who were able to get a lot of steals, but they were gamblers on defense.
Yeah.
I've seen guys who were able to statistically block a lot of shots, but they weren't great defensive players. They weren't able to protect the rim. You know, Ben Wallace was a great rim protector, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have great statistics. You know, Bill Cartwright, for instance, was a terrific defensive center. Okay. But, you know, Tree Rollins was the one that was blocking all of the shots. Doesn't make one better and one worse. The thing that we have to look at in basketball is when you watch a great defensive player, like a Tim Duncan, he's always in the right place. Screen roll, he's in the right place. There are some
and a lot of times that will discourage a shot.
Absolutely. So we can look at the numbers. He blocks a shot. But let me play with Tim Duncan and take my chances because he's always in the right place. So I don't want to put any value to just the numbers and the end result. You know, I want to put emphasis on actually playing the game itself.
All right, let's take a break. Now, Shane, our producer, providing you, not him, but he makes the selection for our halftime entertainment. Enjoy.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, it's the halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast. And today we have Eric B. and Rakim's I Ain't No Joke. I used to let the mic smoke. I'm going to let him tell it.
I ain't no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it when I'm done and make sure it's broke. When I'm gone, no one gets on. Cause I won't let nobody press up and mess up the scene I set. I like to stand in a crowd and watch the people wonder, damn. But think about it, then you understand. I'm just an addict, addicted to music. Maybe it's a habit, I gotta use it. Even if it's jazz or the quiet storm, I hook a beat up, convert it into hip-hop form. Write a rhyme and graffiti in every show you see me in. Deep concentration, cause I'm no comedian. Jokers are wild, if you wanna be tame. I treat you like a child and you're gonna be named another enemy, not even a friend of me, cause you'll get fried in the end when you pretend to be competing. Cause I just put your mind on pause and I complete when you compare my rhyme with yours. I wake you up and as I stare in your face you seem stunned. Remember me, the one you got your idea from, but soon you start to suffer. The tune'll get rougher when you start to stutter. That's when you had enough of fighting, it'll make you choke. You can't provoke, you can't cope. You should've broke because I ain't no joke. As serious as cancer, who can keep the average dancer hyper as a heart attack? Nobody's smiling, cause you're expressing the rhyme that I'm styling. This is what we all sit down to write. You can't make it, so you're taking home, breaking and bite. Use pieces and bits of all my hip-hop hits. Get the style down, packed in, it's time to switch. Put my tape on pause and add some more to yours. Then you figured you're ready for the neighborhood chores. So E-M-C-E-E, don't even try to be. When you come up to speak, don't even lie to me. You like to exaggerate, dream and imaginate. Then change the rhyme around, that could aggravate me. So when you see me come up, freeze, or you'll be one of those 7 MCs. They think that I'm a new jack, but only if they knew that. They who think wrong, or they who can't do that style that I'm doing, they might ruin patterns of paragraphs based on you. And you all be DJ, if anything he play sound familiar, I'll wait till East ain't play him. So I'ma have to diss who broke, you can get a smack for this. I ain't no joke.
Time for the third quarter, you know what that means. NBA trivia, I am the reigning champion. Let me say that again. Reigning champion, right here. So here we go. Legendary teams, that is the category for today. BJ, here is your first question.
Here we go.
This team had a regular season record of 67-15, but did not win the NBA title.
Oh, wow.
Were they the 2008-09 Los Angeles Lakers, the 1985-86 Boston Celtic, 2015-16 Golden State Warriors, or the 2015-16 San Antonio Spurs?
I'm going to say the Spurs.
Look at you. Wow. That is absolutely correct.
All right. Okay.
Now, you know what?
Okay.
I'd love to know why you went that direction. I think you're doing what I do, which is it's not about trying to figure out the right answer. It's trying to figure out how Shane's trying to trick us. All right, what do you got?
We too had a regular season record of 67-15, as well as a 15-3 record in the playoffs and won the NBA title. Who are we? The 85-86 Boston Celtics? The 91-92 Chicago Bulls? The 2014-15 Golden State Warriors, 1995-96 Chicago Bulls.
Give me those teams again. I know you don't have to give me the Warriors. That was 2014-15.
Celtics.
Yep.
The 91-92 Bulls. I think I was on that team. The 14-15 Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
The 95-96 Bulls.
All right, it really comes down to the 95-96 Bulls and the 91-92 Bulls. It's a Bulls team.
Okay.
And I am going to say, now wait a minute. There was 95-96. Was that the 72-10 team? All right, I'm going to say 91-92.
That is incorrect. It is the 85-86 Celtics.
Damn it! my logic and theory wasn't even on. Shoot. All right. I led my team to a regular season record of 65-17. Now, don't get dyslexic on me. Not 67-15. We're changing the record.
Okay.
65-17. And the NBA title. Who am I? Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, or Kobe Bryant?
He led him to a 65-17
record and the NBA title.
And the NBA title.
Yes.
Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, or Kobe Bryant.
Yes.
I'm gonna say Kobe Bryant.
Damn. That is correct.
Wow.
I'm not even.
Don't even ask why. I don't even want to know why.
I'm just an lazy guy. I'm not even going to ask why.
Yeah. I just think it couldn't have been Michael. I don't know why I said that, but it just couldn't have been Michael.
No, you need to tell us why you think that.
Right.
Why couldn't it have been Michael?
Yeah, no.
Because
he guessed. That's why. He guessed. Don't try to act like you came up with a logical answer. You guessed.
It couldn't have been him.
You guessed. You guessed. You guessed.
No. But I really thought it was Larry.
It couldn't have been Michael. I don't know why it couldn't have been Michael. I just decided it couldn't have been Michael. All right. So just for fun, I'll try to get the last one right, even though I've already conceded.
Despite not having the best ever record in NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
We are still regarded as the number one team in NBA history. The 15-16 Warriors, the 95-96 Bulls, or the 96-97 Bulls. This is just, you know, how bad is the gift going to be? That's what's basically this question. Because if you don't get this one, I'm going all in on the gift.
Oh, you're going to do the gift yourself? That's what I want to see.
Yeah,
Shane, is, you know, Shane, that's is, what no, I want to see.
Hey, Shane, I'm playing with house money now.
The stakes is high. The stakes is high.
95-96 Bulls.
You got that one.
Okay. All right. Okay. Oh, we got it.
The stakes is high.
But you know what? I take it back. I'm going to say the Warriors. I want to lose just so I see you put together a gift. I want it to be. I was not thinking. All right. That's the end of Trivia Madness. Wow. I know it's four quarters of madness. We may have to change the name of the show. Now, Tim Hardaway Jr., who has really found a place for himself with the Atlanta Hawks, looked as if he might be out of the league, making two stints in the D-League. No guarantees. I watched him in preseason where he couldn't hit a shot.
Right.
But now he has become a key component, sometimes starter, for the Atlanta Hawks. We caught up with him to find out just all about the influence that his mom, his dad, what it means to be following the footsteps of Tim Sr. And The question, what the hell happened between Tim Sr. and B.J. Armstrong when they were both Golden State Warriors, and how much did Tim Jr. know about it?
You got to listen to find this one out.
That's coming up next. All right, it's now our pleasure to introduce the shooting guard for the Atlanta Hawks, Tim Hardaway Jr. Welcome to Four Quarters of Madness, the BJ and Bucher podcast. Tim, really appreciate you taking the time. Congratulations on what is turning out to be a transformative season for you. First of all, you're coming to us just right after practice, so give us the state of you and the Atlanta Hawks right now at this point in the season.
I think we're getting off to a good start after, you know, the All-Star break. I mean, we lost two games in a row, but I think after getting that win in Boston in a hostile environment and pulling out a win over there, I think it's really setting the tone of how we want to play as a team moving forward.
Tim, question. You're playing in the East. You guys are right in the thick of it. Who or any team that you guys are concerned about? I don't want to say you want to avoid, but are there any teams that you feel that you can't beat at this point as you enter into the final stages of the season, as you head into the playoffs?
I mean, I think as a team, I think we're confident playing against anybody right now. I mean, it really doesn't matter at this point. You know, it's all about getting to the playoffs and trying to get that home court advantage. If you get home court advantage, then I think you have a possibility of winning all the games at home and hopefully one on the road. Just having that home court advantage means a lot, and just have to take advantage of it. So I think we're just doing a good job right now, just trying to stay in the middle of everything and make sure that we have an opportunity to get to that point of having home court advantage.
Is there any team, Tim, that you guys feel you can't beat?
I mean, I think we could beat any team. I mean, we basically did beat everybody in our conference at least once. So I think all in all, I think we're capable of just doing anything if we just put our mind to it and just play with that confidence like we did in Boston.
Tim, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show that this has been somewhat of a transformative season for you. I feel it's like that. A bit of a roller coaster, and it's balanced out for you. I think you've kind of proved yourself in terms of what you're capable of doing. I think you had like a dozen or so starts in a row for the Hawks. You've had some really big games. Take me through what you think. First of all, if roller coaster season is appropriate, what's the high point and the low point so far for you this season?
I think the high point, I think it's all the way from the beginning of January, from that with the San Antonio Spurs game at home all the way to All-Star break. I think that's when I was playing at my best. And I think the low was that December struggle. I think when we December, November, a little bit, we were losing 9-10 games straight, I think it was. And it just wasn't – everything just wasn't really clicking that well. Everybody's shooting percentage was down as a team and individually. And we just couldn't find our niche. So I think just after that San Antonio Spurs game on January 1st and all the way till All-Star break, I think we just did a great job of just staying confident, playing with passion, playing with pace, and just playing with a sense of urgency.
Tim, to our listeners out here, you're a young player in the league. Confidence is everything. And the thing I've always admired about you from when you first came in the league, you had an amazing amount of confidence, even in college. How important is it for especially young players to not get too high, not get too low? And could you share with us how you maintain your confidence through the highs and lows of this league and share with us and share with our listeners what that means?
Yeah, I think one thing my dad would always tell me is just go out there and have fun at the end of the day. With that being said, you know, having fun also, you know, involves, you know, also being confident in your abilities to go out there and perform. So I just try to just keep that mindset and just play with that same type of passion I played with when I was in college. And, I mean, there's going to be games where you go 0 for 10, 0 for 12, and there will be games when you go 11 for 13, 13 for 17, and make all your threes, or you go 5 for 7 from the three-point line. It'll be times like that. And you just have to block all that out and just keep moving on to the next game. There will always be a next game. There will always be another opportunity in this league. And that's just what I think our mindset as young players nowadays have moved towards. If you have a bad game, you know, you move forward and go into the next one, and you could easily be the hero of the next game.
So you and I had a chance to catch up after you guys beat the Knicks, which was another big performance by you, another clutch performance resembling the San Antonio game. And I we had a chance to talk, and I think everybody thinks about your dad and him having maybe the biggest influence or putting the biggest pressure on you or providing the most information. But you told me that the family dynamic is a little different than that. Can you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, I think my mom plays that role, I think, a little bit different than my dad would. She's been around the game of basketball since my dad was in high school. So she knows everything about the game. I think she knows more about the game than some people, you know, that I even know. It could be friends, it could be people in the NBA, it could be anything. I think she just knows the game, and she's my biggest critic. And my dad can tell you that firsthand. And I call her after every game. She'll tell me what to do and not to do. She'll yell at me. Still scream at the TV and tell Coach Bud to sit me down if I'm doing something wrong. I'm just an ultimate fan, you know, and she knows everything about the game. Like I said, she's been around this NBA and this league for a very, very long time, and she's just continuing on with me being in it right now.
How has it been? So what's the role that your dad plays?
Oh, my dad, he's been on me, you know, since day one. One of the few comments when I was young was that he told me, if you're not going to take the game serious, then we're going to stop going to these tournaments. We're going to stop going to these AAU events for you to go play and so on and so forth. And I think I really took that to heart, and I really sat down and thought about it. I think around like my ninth grade, going into the summer of my sophomore year in high school. I told him that I really wanted to take it serious, and that's when we started getting in the weight room. That's when we started to have good days outside of AAU and in the summer. In the summer, I wouldn't even hang out with my friends. I would go to the gym because I knew I wanted to play in college, and I knew I wanted to pursue a career in the NBA. So it was all about sacrificing, and I think everything is paying off right now.
Well, Tim, we want to thank you again for coming on the show, and hey, we're certainly fans here at the BJ and Bucher Show, and continue to do your thing. And, you know, it's kind of weird for me to sit here and listen to you, because I played with your dad and I know your mom, and this is a weird deal. And I remember you when you were coming to the games and you were jumping all over your mom and dad and jumping on the cars after the game. So all the best, continued success.
Yeah,
it's been great. Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, I have to add this. I'm glad BJ brought this up, because this is really why I wanted, Tim, I wanted to celebrate the fact that you're having a great season. But this is what I really wanted to get to. You know that your dad was so pissed off that BJ was starting ahead of him that he got his ass traded to Miami. You know that, right? That happened. I was there. Hey. I was covering the team. Tim was so upset.
Tim,
he was like, BJ Armstrong is starting ahead of me? What? How much conversation did you?
So this guy's trying to cause.
No. I just want to know,
Tim,
like,
this is fake news.
Tim, how aware were you of that fact when you were growing up as a kid? Like, when you were in the car going home, how much was Dad saying, "Damn, can you believe it? BJ Armstrong starting ahead of me. Can you believe that?"
I was probably, he probably told me, but I was probably too young to even realize what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Great answer, Tim. Great answer.
That was great. That was great.
That was a great answer. Hey, well, we appreciate the time. All the best the rest of the season in the playoffs. We'll be rooting for you here. And again, thanks again for coming on and taking the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Tim Hardaway Jr. Remember, if you're listening on iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show. You can rate and leave a review. We always love to hear what you have to think. And check out our brand new website, bjandbuecher.com. It has all the podcasts there. It also has various articles about various things going on in the league, some of them written by me, some of them written by other contributors. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at BJ and Bueker. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at you next week.